At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL. Welcome in to the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Pelizzolo back here with Sam Monson, coming to you from our offices at Cincinnati. Hello to our YouTube friends. Appreciate everybody that's been watching on YouTube, and appreciate the millions and millions that have been downloading this thing now that we've moved to podcast one. I think that's helped a little bit. We got new listeners, Sam, and I hope everybody's enjoying the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Nearly another week of football over, Steve. Or in fact, it is another week of football over. We're starting into the next week, Thursday night football.
We're here. So last week, you guys heard me, predicted Thursday night football. Baker Mayfield going to save the Browns. We did it ahead of time. We recorded before Thursday night football. We're doing that again. So that's going to be our thing. I don't know if I could duplicate last week's perfect prediction, but I guess we'll have to try.
So what happened tonight?
The Rams killed Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, I can see that.
They hurt him. Maybe he missed a play or two.
Okay.
Aaron Donald and Ndamukong Suh against that Vikings interior. They got after him. I think it was a sloppy game on the short week. Sloppy game, both sides. Got a little ugly, but the Rams pull it off.
Okay. Low scoring?
It starts out low scoring, and then it just gets hectic. It just goes batty.
Gets away from the Vikings later on.
It gets batty in the second half.
Okay.
Yeah. How's that sound?
So, sounds like it was a good game for everybody to watch.
Always. Every Thursday night game is going to be good. We're going to talk them up.
Okay.
Do you have a thing? Are you going to predict two, or is it all on me?
Well, you're 1-0. I'm going to let you roll.
See, I would rather just retire with what I did.
No. We're going to see how this plays out, if you actually can predict the future or not.
Yeah, we'll see.
Because that would be useful if you can.
I mean, it would be.
You know, we could do some things with that.
I feel like our podcast would take off even more. We would leave podcast one and just go off on our own. We don't need anybody anymore. Steve's going to predict the future.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, I would think our public-facing side would be less important than what we can do on the back end with, you know, gambling and whatnot.
Yeah.
But
it's a good point.
Whatever.
Anyway, so we did want to start off with this guy right here, Baker Mayfield. He's on the big screen behind us on the YouTube because, yes, not only did I predict he would save the Browns last week, but he went out there and, of course, made PFF look good. Anytime Baker looks good, he's making us look good as well. And, you know, what did you make of his debut? Because, again, I kind of expected him to do that. I just had these expectations he was going to go in and make this great comeback against the Jets. What were your feels as this was going on?
Yeah, I mean, the first few, the opening of any player in a new season, even in the first year, it's always just reinforcing kind of what you thought, right? You always look for the thing that backs up your take, and if it's not there, you kind of ignore that one, move on to the one that does. So it's really easy to look at Baker Mayfield's debut and say it's exactly what we thought. It's what the guy we saw all the way through the draft process. He looks great. He's accurate. All this stuff. Isn't PFF fantastic? And obviously we know it's a small sample size, and you know, we'll see how it progresses as his career unfolds. But he does have the look of a quarterback that is going to be very good.
Yeah.
You know, we saw it with a guy like Jimmy Garoppolo that, okay, he's come a little bit down to earth as this season has progressed before he went down injured, which brought him all the way down to earth. But it just looked different, right? When they had C.J. Beathard, it was, what, a third-round pick, and a guy who wasn't playing terribly for a rookie and a guy who had no business starting. You were kind of like, oh, I mean, you know, okay, they're losing, but he's not horrendous.
Right.
And then Jimmy G comes in, the whole thing just looks completely different. That's what Baker Mayfield did. You know, Tyrod Taylor had been playing terribly. Baker Mayfield comes in, and it just immediately transforms everything. Like, they look different immediately. You and I, one throw in, were like, oh, he's definitely making this comeback.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is happening. And it wasn't like a joking thing. It was, oh, this is just, this has changed. This is different now. So, yeah, I think, you know, we have had fantastic confidence in Baker Mayfield all the way along because of his college tape, because it was so good. And that's why we said he was the number one overall pick in this draft right from the get-go. So, obviously, this confirms that, right? But, you know, we still have to see.
So, it's his first road game. That's something different. He's going to be playing at the Oakland Raiders. The Raiders at 0-3 before the season. I thought they'd be a little bit better than you thought. And they've had a couple close games, though. So, they're close. So, I still don't know that they're 0-3 bad. But, pass rush is one of the worst in the NFL. If only they could find a pass rusher.
They're hard to find, Steve.
They are. Arden Key's leading the team with 6 pressures, 5 QB hits, 1 hurry. Doesn't even have a good pass rush grade at 60.7. So they're not getting after the quarterback. Looks like Baker should have some clean pockets to throw from. And then offensively, we've seen some ups and downs with Derek Carr. But again, I still think this team should be a little bit better than just 0-3.
On 91 total pass rushes, Khalil Mack almost has as many total pressures as the Raiders, period, from 420, I think, combined pass rushes that the defenders has.
That's what we need to tally up over here.
Yeah.
Even if it's pressure percentage, so it can be every Raiders pressures on a per-play basis versus Khalil Mack by himself on a per-play basis.
Definitely beating the Raiders.
That's what we need to have tallied up here.
In pressure percentage, but he's almost beating them in total pressures, period, despite playing, you know, a fraction.
So matchup-wise, I do want to see what the rookie Colton Miller does against Myles Garrett. Myles Garrett rushing off the edge against Colton Miller, who's been pretty good pass protection. Had a good game last week against Miami, 74.5 pass blocking grade. And he graded well for us in college, but we saw a lot of technical question marks and things that said, look, this might be a tough transition for him. So far, he's been pretty good in pass protection, not so good in the run game.
Yeah, and Myles Garrett has the ability to make that a big mismatch in Cleveland's favor. I mean, I think it's kind of crazy because the Browns are the Browns, and they're only half a game away from being the Browns. The only thing that's different is Tyrod Taylor. But a lot like that Jimmy Garoppolo thing again, it just changes what this team is. And suddenly, I think the Cleveland Browns are going to win this game, despite the fact they're traveling cross country to the Raiders. You know, a year ago, or with the Browns in the situation they were before Mayfield came in, there was no way you would think that.
So I also took the Browns, and so here's what I think the result is using your Jimmy G example. We're going to be sitting here a few weeks from now and talking about all the talent that's on Cleveland's roster. Instead of me making excuses, they're better than they look, and 0-16 and everything, it's going to be like, oh, wow, Baker's thrown to Antonio Callaway, who's emerged. You know, they've got an offensive line who's protected. They're throwing to Rashard Higgins, the next Isaac Bruce. I'm sorry. Maybe this is it.
This Higgins. Is what I said. I told you before the season, did I not? This is what's going to happen. Mayfield comes in.
Higgins goes 12 for 180 this week.
Mayfield and Higgins were the connection on the second team. When Higgins comes in, or when Mayfield comes in, that's when Higgins is going to break out. He's finally got a legitimate quarterback throwing in the ball. It's going to be Rashard Higgins emerging as the next wide receiver in Cleveland.
Baker's throwing to Higgins and Callaway.
Okay.
And Njoku. Oh, wow, he's got weapons. Hey, the offensive line's protecting him better. And then, hey, Myles Garrett, defensive player of the year candidate, and Larry Ogunjobi's breaking out, and Joe Schobert's making plays. People are going to start noticing the talent, I think, on the Browns' defense because they're going to start winning some games.
And Denzel Ward. Still making them look smart for taking the corner.
In the defensive rookie of the year conversation. So we're taking the Browns. Let's look at what the rest of PFF is doing here. Do we have anybody taking Oakland? We have Neil taking Oakland.
Neil went rogue this week. He's got all kinds of lone wolf picks in this particular one.
Judging by our Twitter mentions, I think this is the game people were referring to. Some people asked if Neil's ever watched football, and then other people said Neil's a genius.
Well, also he picked Buffalo over Green Bay.
Oh, that might have been
the only person doing that.
That could have been what that was all about.
That would make him look like a genius if that came off.
All right, let's get into a segment that we've tried these last couple weeks. What are we doing? Mismatch of the week?
Yeah.
Mismatch of the week. I can't read sometimes.
Biggest mismatch of the week.
The biggest mismatch of the week. We saved this to the end in previous pods, but let's get into it. Right now, Sam, what do you have as the biggest mismatch that people are going to be able to watch this week?
Well, this past week, J.J. Watt was back, all the way back. And J.J. Watt all the way back is maybe the best defensive player in the game. He's going up against Joe Haig, who we've said before is one of the biggest problems on the Indianapolis Colts offensive line. J.J. Watt against Joe Haig just screams, oh, no, no. No. It's going to go bad.
I think I'm going with one of the reasons why J.J. Watt was back, and it was the fact that he went up against Chad Wheeler last week.
Yeah.
So maybe, you know, I'm going with Chad Wheeler, who now has to go up against Cameron Jordan of the Saints. So,
yeah.
You can't hide your right tackles in the NFL. You just can't.
Not when they suck, no.
So they bench Ereck Flowers. Chad Wheeler comes in last week, has a 40 overall grade.
He was bad enough that they were legitimately putting Rhett Ellison, the tight end, on J.J. Watt one-on-one as a better option than leaving him one-on-one with Chad Wheeler.
Yeah. Gave up 5 pressures on 35 pass blocking snaps, 3 of which were sacks. So I'm going to say Cameron Jordan, who I still say is one of the more underrated players in the NFL.
Okay.
Around, you know, your more average fan. We've been touting him for a few years. I think that's my biggest mismatch of the week. So check it out. Saints, Giants, on that offensive line. Getting into one of the other big games of the week, would you ever have thought the 3-0 Miami Dolphins going to New England, who's 1-2, do you ever think it would get to this point? Week 4 in the season, we've got this extremely pivotal AFC East matchup.
It's really big because the Patriots find themselves in a really deep hole if they lose. Like, it's not
huge, yeah.
It's not critical right now, but it's about to be if they don't win this game. So that's what makes it a real problem. The forecast guys, the analytics brains of this whole building, who do they have as a slightly better chance of winning the division right now?
It's very slight. They've got the Dolphins
right
at this point. Taking those 3, I mean, because they do have a 2-game lead on New England, and the way they explained it to me, I mean, it's not. New England's favored this weekend, right? They're still more likely to win, but it doesn't mean that there's no chance that Miami wins, of course. We just saw New England lose to the Lions. So if Miami can pull the upset, like you said, then they're so far ahead. And then even if New England does turn it around, there's just in such too big of a hole.
It's a really interesting game because the Patriots looked horrendous against the Lions. And the Lions, I don't think, are good. So like the Patriots looked terrible against not a great team. I don't think Miami are a great team either, despite being 3-0. We did a whole segment on Sports Illustrated earlier this week about how, okay, they're 3-0, but look at who they've played and look at all the problems on this team. And there are some issues. The offensive line has been okay, but they're vulnerable in certain areas. You know, Ryan Tannehill has been playing really well, but he's, you know, still Ryan Tannehill. Like, he's an average quarterback that may be having a good run at the moment.
He's got a passer rating over 121, so that we just know is going to come down.
Exactly.
But that shows a little bit of the coaching and the playmakers
it
that
does.
They've added.
But overall, I think this team is not a great one. It's a team that's been able to overcome 3 games right now against competition that is not fantastic. And, of course, you have that added dynamic of Josh Gordon potentially playing, which has the potential to change a lot about what's going on in New England, which is there's no playmakers anywhere. It's Rob Gronkowski, and if you do what the Lions did and legitimately double-team Rob Gronkowski, where are they going with the ball?
Right.
Gordon comes in, that could change entirely, even if he's only able to run 2 things, right?
Yeah.
Even if you just send him out every single play, say all you're doing is running a go or a slant, that will change things because he will get open on those plays. Then the added dynamic of Josh Gordon against Xavien Howard makes for fascinating watching because we've talked before, Xavien Howard is a boom or bust corner.
I'll discuss him in a minute.
At the moment, he's on the boom end of things. He's playing extremely well, but that's not to say that this next week he won't go in the tank and, you know, get eaten alive by Josh Gordon. So
his stats are fascinating. We'll
there's a lot of layers to this Patriots-Dolphins game, all of which kind of lead you into this idea that the Patriots actually need to win this.
Yes, they definitely do. They're 1 week away from getting Julian Edelman back, which I think changes the offense far more than Josh Gordon probably will. But there is this chance that Josh Gordon does add that dynamic where you at least have to account for him. He can beat one-on-one coverage. It got worse for New England this week, though, because Juwan Bentley, the guy that's been playing better than anybody on that defense probably besides Trey Flowers, the rookie linebacker, he's on injured reserve. And then Rex Burkhead, the guy that they were trying to feed as their number one back early in the season, both from a receiving and from a rushing standpoint, he's on injured reserve. And Burkhead was doing some nice things in the pass game. So now, when you don't have receivers that can get open, like Brady has right now, you either have Gronk or you have the running backs who can get open against linebackers. Burkhead had been doing a nice job in the pass game. James White does a nice job in the pass game. Sony Michel's not doing anything. You know, they're feeding him the ball, and he's just been on different pages with Brady and dropping passes and just, you know, an okay runner. So, they're losing even more playmakers on both sides of the ball.
I think that was... this has been Tom Brady's slowest start since the 2014
season.
And I think that might have been his lowest graded game since that Kansas City game.
Since the Kansas City game, yep.
And then that Kansas City game was the moment
that was
where it turned around.
That was the on to Cincinnati game.
Yeah, the on to Cincinnati game. Yep. And then from that point on, it was a series of dark green or blue PFF grades for like seven straight weeks. He went from being awful, written off, to really good.
He's been, if you just take PFF grades from that week through now, by far the highest graded quarterback in the NFL. Not even close, but between him and Rodgers and Brees and everyone else.
But in particular, it was immediately. It was that game on to Cincinnati. The Cincinnati game onwards marked a run of half a dozen straight games where he was basically elite.
It was really funny, though, because last week we were saying that was supposed to be the on to Cincinnati game, right? So... The Detroit game was not what people expected.
No.
It was not what people expected. Credit the Lions. People are trying to compare it to, was it the Kansas City loss, whatever. There was a loss that the Patriots had, and this is how good they've been. You can kind of like pull out a few bad losses in their entire 20 years here. 2010, they lost to the Cleveland Browns. I saw Greg Bedard mention this one, and it made a lot of sense. That game was an overmatched Cleveland Browns team that just had everything go right and trick plays and everything worked out well, and they just dominated the Patriots. They went on a stretch after that in 2010 too, where they played extremely well. So this would be the week. Like, they kind of need to do it at home against Miami. If they don't, though, then the concerns start. I'm not concerned yet if you're a Patriots fan, but if it doesn't happen this week with Miami division game, then you're concerned.
I mean, if it doesn't happen this week, it's now a major obstacle to overcome. You actually need to do something pretty special over the rest of the season to overcome, you need to do something pretty special, or the Dolphins need to do something pretty special in terms of the reverse to swing that.
So I'm just not a believer in the Dolphins roster in general, keeping this up. They still look like a 9-7 team at best if all the, you know, things fall into place, and they're off to a good start with that. They also lose William Hayes now because he's trying to not kill quarterbacks, which apparently, you know, you blow your ACL out when that happens.
Yeah.
So, who you got in this one?
The Patriots.
Okay, I think everybody took the Patriots. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, so everybody's taking New England, which brings us to our Dalton coaster of the week. I'm going to start just because we already mentioned the guy's name, Xavien Howard. Mm-hmm. He is the epitome of a Dalton coaster. His stats this year, fascinating. He's given up 5 catches on 15 targets. That's outstanding.
Yep.
I lost the number. 5 for 151 yards.
That's not
so
outstanding.
That's 30 per catch. You know, his coverage grade still lands at a solid 70, but we've been saying for a while, 1 week he's Richard Sherman, that's what he was last week, making those, you know, contested catch interceptions and all that stuff. 2 picks last week, 2 pass breakups. He has games where he looks like the best corner in the league, and he has games like in week 2 where he's a 51.6, week 1 he was a 61.1, and we're looking at PFF coverage grades, so you don't know what you're going to get from Xavien in any given week.
Yeah, and that's why I think if he ends up covering Josh Gordon a lot, I think it's a really interesting matchup because he's one of the few guys that does have the size, speed, and physicality to be able to go up with him one-on-one, which could go one of two ways, right? You could either take him out of the game completely, or you could end up with 2 of those 50-yard catches in the game, and everything goes the Patriots' way.
And last year, he took out Brandon Cooks.
Yeah.
He was picking Brady off, too. So the game in Miami where Brady struggled, Xavien Howard was outstanding. That would be a Baylor-on-Baylor matchup if it's him versus Gordon. Mm. Who you got? Who's your Dalton coaster? Again, the Dalton coaster is the guy that's really high 1 week, really low the next week.
Joe Flacco. This may be the single greatest coaster season that I've ever seen through 3 weeks. His PFF grades through 3 weeks, 87 week one, 39 week two, 90 week three.
It just coincides with being home or away.
I mean, that is a hell of a swing.
That
up
is
and
impressive.
Down. So if things go to plan or things stick to the coaster, this week will be down in the 30s somewhere.
And we were there for that grade in the 30s. Therefore, that just we have to weigh that so much higher because I saw it in person. It's so much more important when you see it in person.
Okay.
Is that right? That's how scouts do it, Sam.
Sure.
I was there for his bad games, so the good games don't count.
Okay. Well, he's due another bad game is what I'm saying.
They're also on the road.
Yeah, there you go. So, and against Pittsburgh.
So you're expecting – yeah. Division on the road game. Against Pittsburgh, so we're expecting him to drop off. All right, quick break to tell you about our friends over at SimpliSafe. Sam, you were just installing this thing, right?
Yeah, I installed the thing last night. We got sent a box of all kinds of goodies, which I attempted to install last night. Turns out it's actually really easy because it's all – you don't have to like – so you were concerned, right? Do you need to be handy to install
I'm not handy. I'm not good at – building or putting things together, yes. Anything of that sort.
That was the text you sent me, and I said no, because it's all tape, right? The stuff is, it's got kind of double-sided tape at the back of it, so you just pull the cover thing off and stick it to the wall where you want it to be. I did point out that you might still struggle because that's how bad you are, but for regular people,
our average listeners, it's pretty simple.
I would think, yeah, the average listener will be fine. You maybe not.
Okay, so I'm in the process of eliminating my old security system, replacing it with SimpliSafe, shout out to them, and I'll report back on how easy it was. I'm assuming it's going to be pretty easy. It looks easy. Simple,
yeah, it really
simple
was.
Installation, and then just a whole lot of cool perks with this thing.
Yeah, a whole lot of cool stuff. Like there's a fancy security camera that works at night. You can, like, if I had my phone on me right now, which I can't have because we'll send this entire electrical equipment haywire.
Yeah.
But if I had it right now, I could show you my front door from the app.
Oh, that's amazing.
Right?
So I love it. So SimpliSafe, it's ready for anything that gets thrown at it. If it's a storm taking out your power, SimpliSafe is ready. Intruder cuts your phone line, SimpliSafe is ready. Say you even destroy your keypad or siren, SimpliSafe will simply get you a new one.
Mm.
They'll give you the help that you need. It might be overkill, but no. Maybe you don't need to be ready for every worst-case scenario, but that's what makes SimpliSafe's home security so great. It is always ready, and it's not a lot of money. They only charge you what's fair. 24/7 professional security monitoring is just $14.99 a month, Sam. No contracts, no hidden fees, and I'm in. Like, I'm recommending SimpliSafe to everybody I know, especially if you go to simplisafe.com/PFF today. That's simplisafe.com/PFF to protect your home and family today. That's where you get your special deal, simplisafe.com/PFF.
Here's what I like about them, right? Most security systems will get you, like, idiot burglar-proof, you know, the terrible burglar that just wants to smash their way through your thing.
Yeah.
But, like, you can't. This will make you, like, criminal mastermind-proof. Because when they, cut your power phone, this is like Hollywood criminal deal, right? When the Hollywood criminal cuts your power and your phone lines and comes in under the cover of darkness, most people are screwed. You're still fine. That thing is blaring away, sending the cops on them.
They have really thought of everything. And we were on the phone with them the other day, and you said, my security system right now is a baseball bat. And they said, we hear that all the time. We can be a little bit better than your baseball bat. So right now, if you have just a baseball bat as your home security system, get to simplisafe.com/PFF. Get in with SimpliSafe today. All right, we got a couple other games we want to go a little bit more in-depth on. We'll get into every game at some point. Jets, Jaguars. We want to talk a little bit about quarterback play, Sam Darnold and Deshaun Watson. Okay, so we'll start with Sam Darnold, where you've got this rookie going up against the Jags defense. This is going to be tough. Sam Darnold taking a bit of a step back these last couple weeks.
Yeah, what's interesting is his overall PFF grade has gone down every single week. He started off reasonably well. And even then, we were saying, pump the brakes a little bit. It wasn't amazing.
Yeah,
it
right.
was a pretty good start, right? So he's gone from that pretty good start to okay and to all right. So that's a little bit concerning. Okay,
yes.
he's, you know, the youngest rookie starter ever or whatever all these numbers are. So we're not saying write the guy off or anything. But he's gone down every single week, and now he rolls into the Jags defense, which obviously is a buzzsaw. So could be a rough night for Sam Darnold.
Yeah, the Jags defense, they make everything difficult. Where are they now in our coverage grades? A little bit lower than expected. Are they lower than expected here? Where did they go? Lower than expected. What's the overall defense right now? Just sorting by PFF Elite.
Bear with Steve while he
number 12 defense. I still think they're... But they came in one of the best defenses in the NFL.
Yeah.
So we're expecting that to turn around a little bit. That back seven does make it quite difficult for anybody, especially a rookie like Sam Darnold. They can still rush the passer. We saw that against New England a few weeks ago. Jags are in a weird spot. I'm still looking at Bortles in this game because last week you said that he was bad.
Hmm.
He was bad last week.
Yeah.
But he was good 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
But that's been my point.
What was your point?
I mean, it lands at average. He's an average to below average quarterback, right? He's not bad.
Yeah,
he's we're not gonna build this up again. He's got a 74.1 PFF grade, which is still solid right now on the season. But you just don't know what you're going to get from him every week. They scored 6 points last week. They lost.
Yeah.
6 points.
Against the Titans.
Yeah. Titans are sneaky good. They're better than you think, too.
Oh,
I think
God.
You think everybody's bad.
No, I really don't.
That's what I think. That's what it comes across like.
No. Only bad things. I like a lot of good things.
What are you expecting from Darnold here?
I'm expecting Darnold to have a pretty rough day. Like, that defensive front should chew the Jets' offensive lineup pretty significantly. They don't have the horses to go deep enough to back them off. The Jags can cover deep down the field. It's going to be all this short underneath stuff. The Jags will be able to defend those bubble screens much more effectively than
their fast linebackers.
Well, fast linebackers and people are sticking to the correct assignments when they start moving those receivers in and out of bunch formations. So,
yeah.
I don't even know how the Jets move the ball effectively.
You've got Yannick Ngakoue and Malik Jackson tied for the team lead with 9 pressures apiece. In Jacksonville, Calais Campbell has 8. Dante Fowler and Lorente McCray both have 6. So, I mean, and Fowler's only played 35 snaps. I mean, you're talking about just, a very deep defensive line getting after the quarterback. So Darnold has struggled a little bit in recent weeks. Where's his grade at right now?
It's not good.
I'm surfing. I'm surfing as I do this right now.
Yeah, this is great radio.
Is it good?
Oh, yeah.
Watch me. Feel me typing through PFF Elite right here. Sam Darnold number, it's 32 if I don't filter. Let me just filter it real quick. This is great.
This is much
podcasting.
Better.
When I filter the grades, Darnold's at 30th PFF grades right now.
That's even better than when Mike used to just read lists of things.
It is better. It is better, I think. Now, where's Deshaun Watson on this list? Because that's the next guy we got to talk about. Oh, wait, do you have a pick in this game? Is everybody taking Jacksonville?
Yeah. They have to be, right? Yeah, everybody's taking Jacksonville.
Everybody's taking Jacksonville to win this game. Now, the other interesting story is Deshaun Watson. And he's number 11 in PFF grading right now, despite a passer rating of only 89.8, Sam. That passer rating ranks 19th. So why the discrepancy? Why is he number 11? In PFF grade, number 19 in QB rating, because, you know, the opposite is happening of last year. Last year, he didn't grade as well. The stats were great because people saved him or whatever, but coming into the season, we said that supporting cast is just not good enough this year. That's why the Texans are 0-3.
Yeah, he's had some passes that were dropped. He's been playing under pressure basically the entire time. He's playing, it's kind of what we said rolling into the season, that he may be playing better than last season. Obviously, the numbers were going to regress because they were absurd. But more importantly, it may not matter if the offensive line and everything around him is so bad. And that's kind of what we're seeing. They have a quarterback that can pass the ball. They don't have a secondary that can stop the pass. And they don't have an offensive line that can protect the quarterback, protect the passing game. So they're bad in 2 of the 3 most important areas that you can have.
What do you think about him going up against this Colts defense? We've got our guy, Eric Eager, running through all of the defensive scheme numbers. I don't know if you saw these yet, but essentially he's plotting them into quadrants, right? So you could say, okay, all the cover one teams, like just from a scheme standpoint, you just kind of put them in the same bucket. He's got the Colts in their own special quadrant, meaning it's just based off style, has nothing to do with success. So they're in their own special quadrant of like cover two team.
Yeah.
They're just playing a whole different brand of football like it's 2002.
So at the moment, what the Colts seem to be doing is essentially creating this preseason vanilla defense because they don't think they have the talent on defense to play anything else.
Yeah.
And they just want to create this defensive system that's at least it asks the very least possible of its talent and kind of schematically tries to take away the worst plays and then just hope that the offense is inept enough that it'll smash itself against the rocks, essentially,
right,
while it moves its way down the field. And it's kind of working. Like, it's not a good defense, but it's way better than it should be, given the talent that they're putting out there. So it's kind of fascinating seeing how it's going to go up against this Houston offense, because outside of Deshaun Watson and Nuke Hopkins and Will Fuller to an extent, like, it's not a good Houston offense either. So they're going to look a lot better rushing the passer because they're going up against maybe the worst offensive line in the game. And they're probably going to frustrate Deshaun Watson into making a mistake or two because that's kind of what that defense is set up to do. It's kind of an interesting thing to watch. Most teams are trying to go the other way and trying to scheme more and more sophisticated and clever systems. The Colts are basically just rolling out there and saying, okay, what's the easiest thing we could possibly ask 11 guys to do? And let's just hope you're not good enough to pick it to pieces.
It is fascinating because we have the coverage numbers. They're playing cover two, you know, your classic old school two high zone, 34% of the time. The next closest team is Cleveland at 26%. So they're 8% more just cover two. And then just all of your two high looks, cover two, cover four, cover six. They're all kind of in a similar family. They're different schemes, but similar family. They're almost 60% of their coverages are two high looks. Even with a guy like Malik Hooker, who we said was like the perfect single high safety, they're not even playing that scheme. But he made a nice play last week as a cover two. You know, rangy safety broke up a pass from Carson Wentz. So it is interesting because they're not a talented team. They don't have a ton of big names. You have guys like Marcus Hunt playing well and all that stuff, but they're finding a way to just, you know, stay in these games and keep them close. I don't know if that bubble bursts, you know, at some point.
The Houston offensive line has allowed 55 total pressures through 3 weeks. That is insane.
What's that pace?
Did you work that pace out right now?
Now this is where I distract people.
That pace,
okay, now you got it,
is 293 total pressures over a season.
What were they at last? They were like 270 last year?
253. So they would be 40 more than last year, which is the most we've ever seen.
Man.
Last year was the most we've ever seen. So yeah. 40 more than the worst we've ever seen.
And if the Colts keep playing the way they are, rushing four, you know, playing back seven coverage, and they can still get pressure, that could be tough.
Yeah. I mean, that is a ludicrous number of pressures. It's absolutely insane. For example, right, for some context, the Tennessee Titans have allowed 10 pressures this season. The Los Angeles Rams, the best offensive line in the game right now, have allowed 11. So five times.
They're at 55?
Yes. Yeah, five times more than the Rams have allowed through three games.
All right, so let's get to the picks. We have a lot of Indy here. I see you with Indy. I'm the only one taking Houston. I do think that they turn it around a little bit here, and I do think that maybe Indianapolis not having great pass rushers will help that offensive line in the 55 pressures. No?
293 pressure pace. The Colts are going to get some pressure.
The Colts are going to get pressure. So I'm taking Houston. You're taking Indianapolis. Let's get to the captain, though. What does the captain have to say about this game?
Well, let's do two, right? Let's come out of the defeat and move into this week. So what do we got here? Dearest mother, there is little time to dwell on our recent defeat. We shall move onward. There's not a moment to spare as Texans are marching towards our home camp.
Watch out.
Scouts report their sergeant major is so brawny, he's named after a unit of power. I must be vigilant. Andrew. That leads us into, dearest mother, I have received your care package of pickled prairie dogs and possum cakes. The unit has reached home camp. We prepare for the soldiers out of Houston and their clown, who is intimidating, not at all funny. Many have learned that difference the hard way. Andrew.
Try not to laugh on air.
Yeah. I think you can laugh along.
Prairie dog cakes?
Prairie dog cakes. Yeah. And oh, no, possum cakes
possum
and pickled
cakes.
Prairie dog.
Pickled prairie dog. Somebody needs to concoct some of these recipes that he's putting together.
That doesn't sound like a good idea.
No?
No.
I'm full of bad ideas.
As long as you don't do it in the office kitchen.
I mean, I'm rooting for the captain, if not just because the tweets are spectacular.
The tweets are spectacular.
All right, man. Let's. We want to hit every game like we've been. and then we'll hit on some biggest mismatches and marquee matchups of the week. So let's roll through the rest of the slate, starting with the Philadelphia Eagles at the Tennessee Titans. We're going rapid fire here. Give me one thing you're looking for here.
The Eagles' defensive front. It is still dominant. It's got the second-best win percentage in terms of pass rush of any defensive front in the game. It's got the second-most total pressure, 73 of any defensive front in the game. They are still one of the big reasons this team is still a Super Bowl contender, despite a relatively slow start.
The Titans are one of those teams right now that I think play this ugly brand of football where the defense is a little better than people give them credit for because they play in ugly games and you just write them off. So I think I just want to see what their unit is going to do against Carson Wentz in the pass game. Titans right now, number 7 in our defense grades, number 8 as a coverage unit. So I want to see them against against Wentz in the pass game. From a coverage standpoint, top player, Adoree Jackson, 73.5. So let's see it, because I do think with Adoree Jackson, with Malcolm Butler, they have a chance to make things difficult on the back end for teams this season, and they're great and well so far.
Yeah, but at some point they're going to need to score on offense.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to say Mariota. I want to watch Mariota, but he does need to figure it out.
We can now feel his hand again. That's going to help.
It should help. It might not, though. We all have Philadelphia winning this game. Next game, Detroit Lions at the Dallas Cowboys. Sam, what are we looking at?
Offensive line for Detroit. It's been really good. It's now snuck into the top 5 of PFF's offensive line rankings. This is PFF that hates the Detroit Lions.
We do. Detest them.
Their offensive line is now number 5. Rick Wagner has been playing really well. He's allowed just 4 total pressures in 3 games, but he now goes up against DeMarcus Lawrence, who has notched 17 total pressures in 3 games. So that's going to be, an immovable object versus an irresistible force kind of deal. I'm kind of curious to see how that goes.
That should be a good one. And if the Lions hadn't shut down Brady in the pass game, I'd say, okay, this is easy. The Lions don't cover very well on the back end. The Cowboys can't pass the ball, and their playmakers are terrible. But I ended up looking at the same thing you're looking at. Can the Lions keep up their style? They spent all offseason saying, we got to run the ball, we got to run the ball. They did it last week. Was it just because the Patriots had this terrible defensive front? Or did they really get, the best of Frank Ragnow? He was moving people at the point of attack, finally, after struggling the first 2 weeks. Is that run game for real? They finally got their first 100-yard rusher, Kerryon Johnson. He looked very shifty. Did you give him the Arian Foster comp? I thought it was him.
Yeah.
I thought that is a good comparison. I mean, he is going to be an efficient runner, I think, at the next level, whether it matters or not. But I just want to see if they stick with that style and, try to establish the run against this Dallas defensive front. What do we have everybody doing here?
You took Detroit.
I took Detroit. Continuing
it. I took Dallas.
And you took Dallas. This could be a sneaky good game here. We already discussed this one. Let's go to the Cincinnati Bengals taking on the Atlanta Falcons.
Geno Atkins versus the Atlanta Falcons guards, because now both guard spots are a potential problem. No Andy Levitre. He's gone down hurt. Geno Atkins leads all interior defenders with total pressure. I think he's up at 19. He's going to get a ton of pressure, and that could be a major problem for that Atlanta passing game, which has been, it was pretty good last week against the Saints.
It was very good.
But Geno Atkins is going to be in Matt Ryan's lap all day long.
He is. I want to see the Bengals receivers now going up against whatever's left of the Falcons back 7.
Okay.
With Deion Jones, with Keanu Neal, Ricardo Allen, all banged up, because the Bengals now have the best group of playmakers they've had since that handy 2015 season that we always reference, where that elevated Dalton's game. Dalton's playing some pretty good football. Had one of our big-time throws of the week. We have a healthy-ish Tyler Eifert out there making plays. We have Tyler Boyd. You have A.J. Green. You have John Ross, who's still disappointing and leading to interceptions. We had a big debate this week. He's running these bad routes, making Dalton look bad. But, man, he still has this big play potential in there somewhere.
Does Tyler Eifert now top out at healthy-ish?
Oh, yeah. I think that's the max.
Yeah, that's like the ceiling is healthy-ish.
I think if we put a PFF grade on his health, it would just, it could be a 65, and that's it.
That's as high as it's ever getting.
Yeah. It's usually in the 30s, but if you get a 65, it's pretty good. But anyway, it's no coincidence that Dalton's numbers and his performance just look better when Eifert's healthy. It just completely changes the dynamic of that offense.
Yeah, there's a group of quarterbacks in that middle tier that are almost entirely dependent on the situation around them.
Yep.
They're average guys who can be made to look great or bad depending on how the guys around them are.
Especially Dalton's a pretty accurate guy, and if you have guys that are open, he'll get it to them. So he's the epitome of the mid-tier guy that can be elevated. However, we're all taking Atlanta in this one. People like Atlanta.
Apparently.
They're at home. That helps. All right. We already talked about a couple of these other games. Here we go. Bills at the Packers. My picks are off in this spreadsheet here, Sam. Let me fix it.
Yeah. So this past game, the Bills game was absurd. The Vikings upset. It was kind of nuts. But it's one of those games where two things happened. One, the Vikings turned the ball over just relentlessly and gave the Bills short fields to work with all day. Two, Buffalo had an absolute ton of pressure on Kirk Cousins, past the point where we say it's just not happening anymore, it's unsustainable, that team has no shot. Jerry Hughes in particular, I think, had 12 total pressures, something like that in the game. What's going to happen when that doesn't happen? Because David Bakhtiari is going to shut down Jerry Hughes, because David Bakhtiari shuts down everybody. So now you're relying, well, one, you're relying on somebody else getting pass rush pressure, and the Packers' offensive line is one of the best across the board when it comes to pass blocking. So then you just say, okay, well, now what can your defense do if it's not going to get that level of pressure? And I suspect the answer is not a whole amount.
13 for Hughes, 9 for Lorenzo Alexander.
Whoa.
That's a ton of pressure.
Yeah.
I'm interested in, I mean, I want to see Aaron Rodgers go, but I think the Bills back seven, again, last year was good, wasn't good early in the year, and I think they're going to be better than people think because they got that bad first impression. So Rodgers against the Bills secondary will be interesting. I'm more interested in Josh Allen in what could become more, you know, a less controlled game. He had the lead early last week, controlled game. He played a really, really nice game. What if he has to get into a shootout with Aaron Rodgers and he has to take, you know, a little bit more control of the offense? That's what I want to say.
If he has to get in a shootout with Aaron Rodgers, the game is over.
Well, yeah, but, you know, that's what I want to see. That's okay. What I'm interested in. Because I don't think Buffalo is going to shut down Green Bay's pass offense
No.
the way they did in Minnesota last week. You would think we're all taking the Green Bay Packers, but Neil Hornsby, still a believer that in the Buffalo Bills after last week's domination at Minnesota.
Yeah,
at Minnesota.
Apparently. I mean, that would be, if it turns out he's right on that, that would be a hell of a call.
Yeah, it would be. A lot of people are yelling at him on Twitter, though, as we said. All right, next game, Tampa Bay Bucks at the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, this is a kind of interesting game. The wheels almost fell off the Fitzmagic bandwagon this past week against the Steelers. They threatened to. It wobbled. The whole thing was pitching over on two wheels, almost collapsing. And then he dragged himself back, had a couple of big-time throws, almost brought them all the way back in that game. So what happens? Does the Fitzmagic train keep on rolling, or is it just coming apart now?
No,
against Khalil Mack and a really good Bears defense.
No, that's a fair question. It should happen at some point, right?
I mean, it has to happen at some point, right? If it was
play Jameis.
I mean, it was that.
Are you just assuming they're not playing Jameis?
Yes.
They haven't announced it, right?
No, but, you know, they're not.
Why?
Because the Fitzmagic bandwagon kept on trucking.
Because he's going to drop off. Just sell high. Sell high.
No, you said now. You wait until it actually collapses before you jump off.
That might be 12 interceptions on 13 passes.
Okay, then you write off that one game.
That's a whole game. You need that game.
Well,
they're 2-1. They need that game.
The alternative is you put Jameis in, you start losing games.
I don't always like using points, 4 points against. They're number three in points, four at 102, giving up 91.
He made some insane passes in that game.
Oh, of course he did.
Like, absolutely ridiculous. Two
or three.
He's
always had that in him.
Two or three where he was getting drilled at the time and put the ball in a pretty tight window.
That's always been Fitzpatrick, though. He's always been able to do the special stuff. I want to see the Bucs pass rush trying to get after this Bears offensive line, though. The seventh worst pass rushing grade among teams versus the number two pass blocking grade for the Bears. And then, of course, Trubisky needs to do something.
Yes.
With that good pass protection. Where'd we all go with this one, Sam? What do we got here?
Chicago, except Renner and a couple of people at the end. Renner, Gordon, Jeff Ratcliffe.
Ratcliffe and Gordon. So a bit of a mixed bag here.
You and I have gone Chicago.
We both took the Bears. Seattle Seahawks at the Arizona Cardinals. NFC West matchup.
Which offensive line is worse? The Arizona Cardinals or the Seattle Seahawks? They're number 31 and number 32 in the PFF offensive line rankings.
Ooh, big battle here.
Josh Rosen is being thrown out for his first start behind the league's worst offensive line.
Yeah, this could be tough.
I mean, that's just... So, the Houston Texans, we said they'd allowed 55 total pressures. The Arizona Cardinals have only allowed 51, but because of how many more times the Texans have been passing the ball than the Cardinals, it's actually a substantially worse rate of pass-blocking ineptitude for the Cardinals. So... A pass blocking efficiency score, good scores are in the 90s. Most teams are in the 80s and the 70s somewhere. If you're in the 60s, you suck. The Cardinals are 59. I have never, ever seen a team be in the 50s before over any kind of extended period of time. And you're about to throw a rookie quarterback out behind that.
And my thing on this is, I like Rosen. I don't love him. I think guys like in this draft class, Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, even maybe Josh Allen could probably handle the bad pass rush a little bit better than Josh Rosen can. If Rosen can stand in there, he makes all the NFL throw, all that fun stuff. The pressure thing and outside of structure, I struggle with that with him.
So we talked about, you know, if a quarterback has been under pressure, if it's more than 45%, he's in trouble. If it's up near 50, he's basically screwed. The Cardinals have had 97 passing plays and have given up 51 total pressures. Like, that's just horrible.
Poor Sam Bradford, too.
Yeah. I mean, Bradford
can't function.
But he was the sacrificial lamb, right? Now you're throwing in the rookie who's basically just got no shot. Whatever happens.
That's what I want to see, though. I want to see Rosen, but I really don't think you learn. I don't know if you learned anything about Rosen this entire year.
Well, that's what I'm saying, all right? So people talk about whether it's best to sit a quarterback or start him right from the get-go. And I think the answer now is probably you start him from the get-go unless there's a reason that putting him out there would actually do him harm. When your offensive line is going to surrender pressure at 50% of the time, you've reached the point where that's actually going to do him harm. Like, you can break a quarterback in the way they broke David Carr, in the way they broke Mark Bulger with the St. Louis Rams back in the day. You can break a quarterback if you pressure him relentlessly, particularly, I think, early in his career, and the Cardinals are about to give that a shot with Rosen.
The funny thing is, Sam Bradford is also the poster boy for a guy that, because he gets rid of the ball so quickly, he could maybe protect the offensive line a little bit just by getting rid of it. Rosen's not really that guy, though. Rosen's not, you know, every now and again, but he'll hold the ball a little bit
too long. So this is a really small sample size, but Bradford was under pressure 42% of the time, despite the fact that he can get rid of the ball and he can mitigate some of that. Rosen was under pressure 67% of the time.
My goodness.
And as I just said, 50 is a threshold of forget about it. It's not happening.
That was against the Bears, though. That was against the Bears. You're blowing up. That's unprofessional.
Yeah, is that a problem?
Yeah.
Okay.
Please put your phone away. Thank you.
At least silent it.
We're all taking the Seahawks here. Seattle Seahawks. The Seattle Hawks. That's who we're taking. A few more games to get through. San Francisco 49ers. Rest in peace, Jimmy G. Forecast guys, they do a good job, Matt. They take care of them.
Yeah, it was very good.
Yeah, so they forecast. They had their in memoriam for Jimmy G and his season. They'll be going to Los Angeles to take on the Chargers.
Yeah, with C.J. Beathard as their starting quarterback. This isn't what I put down there as the thing that I want to look at. What I actually put down there is the Chargers' guards going up against San Francisco's 52 three techs. You know, the Chargers have very, very bad guards, and San Francisco is the one team that has three techniques all over the place to take advantage of that. But I'm kind of curious to see how C.J. Beathard does in year two. Like I say, he wasn't terrible when he was starting. He was way better than people thought he was going to be, given the perception of him as
true.
A prospect.
True.
So I'm kind of curious to see if he can develop.
His first throw was great. It got called incomplete, but it was in the end zone to Kittle, right, for a touchdown. That he was almost leading that comeback.
But if you forget about the context of what like a legitimate franchise quarterback looks like next to this guy in contrast, right? If you just said this guy is a rookie quarterback in his first year, third round pick. He looked okay last season. And then, you know, half a season essentially learning behind the guy, developing in one of the best systems in the NFL. I'm kind of curious to see if he can do something.
Yeah, so that'll be worth watching. He might have time to throw against what the Chargers have one of the worst pass rushes in the NFL.
Yeah, no Bosa, no pressure.
Seventh worst pass rush in the NFL. Melvin Ingram, a 68.6 pass rush grade, slightly above average. He has 11 pressures. Number two in pressures on the team, Derwin James, the best pass rusher in the draft last year. Derwin James, 6 pressures, 2 sacks, 4 hurries in that group. There are only 17 rushes. Can they get the pass rush going? Nobody else on the interior is doing anything. No other, you know, no replacement really for Bosa on the outside getting after it. Isaac Rochelle has 3 pressures on 82 rushes. He's rushing the passer the second most behind Melvin Ingram. So if the Chargers are going to live up to Mike Renner's Super Bowl hype, they got to get that going shortly. Are we all taking the Chargers still, though?
Yep. Everybody.
Did I fix the...
No.
I got to fix the spreadsheet again here. Yeah, Saints at the Giants. Sam, what are you looking for?
How many catches will Michael Thomas get this week?
Fewer than he's had.
He's got 38 through three games, which is just a ridiculous number. The NFL record over season is 143. He's on pace for like 200 or something at this point.
It's crazy.
And he actually has used the term. He's actually used that number. I think I can get to 200.
200?
Yeah.
Yeah, but 10 yards a pop, sure.
Well, yeah, but that, I mean, that's still kind of impressive.
Still pretty good.
200 catches in a season.
First outdoor game for the Saints. So that could slow their passing attack a little bit. Eli Manning quietly playing well. That's what I'm looking for. Number 9 grade in PFF. You also think he sucks, so.
I don't think he sucks. He's not good.
Oh. 73.6 completion percentage so far this season, which is that him? Am I reading that right? Yeah.
Well, that helps when you're spending most of your time throwing it to Saquon Barkley for 2 yards.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of that. But he's still averaging 7.3 yards per attempt. So Eli's quietly playing pretty well. Can he keep it up against the Saints secondary that has been disastrous this season?
Yeah, Marshon Lattimore hasn't been good.
I know. Disappointing. What's everybody doing here? Oh, Neil went with the Giants, too.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Neil spent this week picking upsets. Not just two. There's another crazy one in there as well.
Is he trying to catch up? All right, so we're all taking the Saints except for Neil taking the Giants. Sunday Night Football, Baltimore Ravens at Pittsburgh Steelers. The Flacco coaster headed to Pittsburgh.
The Flacco coaster heading to Pittsburgh, and Roethlisberger has got his own little roller coaster deal going as well. I don't really know what he is yet this season. He's been bad for games. He looked pretty good this past week, though I don't think as good as the box score numbers against Tampa Bay. What Roethlisberger are we going to get?
So I think, here's what I think about Big Ben, and this is, I think I wrote it in my notes here. It's not a skill set or talent issue. It's not like he hasn't fallen off the map. See some of those throws that he was making, though? Like the throw that sealed the deal for them, stepping up under pressure, just kind of flicking it. All the classic Big Ben plays are in there. There's just a whole bunch of bad decisions in there as well.
Yeah, but he's always made bad decisions.
Like he's making them at a higher rate. So that's why I'm not ready to write off Big Ben.
No.
The grade's not good, but it's one of those things that I think there's enough evidence that say the skill set's still there. He's got all the special plays in him. He'll cut back on the bad decisions to a point, and he'll be fine. But he still showed that he can go out and win a game. The other night, his stats were absolutely inflated, though. You have a 75-yard stiff arm from hell. You've got Antonio Brown taking a 5-yard curl for a touchdown. The stats were – he got player of the week last week because of the stats that Antonio Brown and Vance McDonald earned.
It's so absurd that people are that freaking lazy that it's just, oh, look, Roethlisberger had almost 400 yards.
Does that grind your gears?
It does.
I think we're saving that for Monday, though.
Yeah. Grind my gears gone to Monday.
Write that down.
No, we'll have a new thing on Monday.
We'll have something new. But it grinds our gears, man, when you just look at passing stats and don't properly allocate where they're coming from.
It's outright laziness to say a quarterback threw for this total, therefore he's player of the week. It's like, look what happened. It involved one guy getting bitch slapped to the ground and stood on.
That equaled a 75-yard touchdown.
That turned 20, 15 into 75.
Yeah, the throw didn't change with the stiff arm.
Nothing Ben Roethlisberger did. What Vance McDonald did to steal Chris Conte's soul turned a 20-yard catch into a 75-yard catch.
Correct.
And then all he did was throw a quick smoke screen to Antonio Brown, who makes two Bucks defenders look ridiculous, and Roethlisberger is just sitting there watching it going,
saying, that's my stats, baby.
Exactly.
Touchdown.
Just laughing at what that's doing to his stats.
He also had a pass where are we allowed to say anything negative about Brent Grimes?
Sure, as long as you want to answer the email.
You have to answer the email. Brent Grimes just ended up on the ground, half of his plays
that
we saw.
He was playing drunk. He couldn't keep his feet.
It was bad. There was a pass that Big Ben threw up that Grimes was in position to pick off.
And it just fell over?
It just fell over.
Yeah.
I mean, that should have been a pick, and it turns into a 30-plus yard completion to Juju Smith-Schuster. So, Big Ben had the special plays in there, but a lot of the plays that led to his great stats last week were not all that great.
Yeah.
So, I still think he's got plenty good in him. I think he'll play better going forward. But I also think that the story here with Pittsburgh, they're very similar to the Chiefs, and I know they played in Week 2 and played that Big 12 shootout, but they're very similar to the Chiefs because I don't trust the Steelers' defense against any good passing offense. But look at the playmakers that they're trotting out there, because we just mentioned the Vance McDonald play, but when you have Antonio Brown, you have Juju, you have James Washington. I mean,
who's barely seeing targets, but is doing well when he does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they've got guys to throw to, so they're going to be an exciting, crazy team to watch. We're all taking Pittsburgh here?
Yep.
expecting the Flacco coaster to hit rock bottom again. Mm-hmm. Monday Night Football, the explosive Kansas City Chiefs at the Denver Broncos.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Mahomes, et cetera, that's always fun to watch. But always. I'm kind of curious to see if D. Ford can keep this start to the season going. He's grading bizarrely well for a guy that has typically been useless in the past. 17 total pressures. That's pretty the same good. Number as DeMarcus Lawrence, who is, you know, among the league leaders.
They need it.
Against, you know, a Denver offensive line that's actually solved their problems. Like, they're a pretty good unit again. There's no liability at tackle anymore. So can D. Ford still get pressure against a half-decent unit?
I'm just going to roll this, what I want to watch, right into our marquee matchup, which is our final segment, because I want to see Tyreek Hill against Chris Harris. Hill will move around the formation a little bit. Harris will play outside and in the slot. Tyreek Hill, our boy Mike Renner, posted all sorts of GIFs on Twitter. Not GIFs.
No.
GIFs. Yes. We're standing strong against that. On Twitter, just showing some of his all-22 plays, they are spectacular. From the releases to just the speed that he plays at Tyreek Hill is awesome. So him against Chris Harris, Tyreek Hill is averaging 22.1 yards per catch right now. The number 4 graded receiver in PFF.
Yeah, he is terrorizing defenses. If you can't get your hands on him at the line of scrimmage, you are in trouble. And getting your hands on him at the line of scrimmage is not easy. And when you miss, you're in even worse trouble than you are if you don't get anything on him.
And Harris has been pretty much good against everybody. Yeah. Sans, like, one Antonio Brown game or two.
Yes, and that Antonio Brown game would be the thing that would terrify you because kind of the same issue there.
Oh,
if you don't get a hand on him, you're in trouble.
I think Hill could beat anybody right now.
My marquee matchup of the week it's in jeopardy, actually, because of the injury report. DeMar Dotson, right tackle with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, goes up against Khalil Mack. You know, general freak show, dominating everybody.
Yeah.
Dotson's a really good right tackle, though. He's allowed just 3 hurries. But he's on the injury report. I don't know how healthy he's going to be, assuming he does play. But I hope he's at least somewhere close to 100% because that could be a really fun battle. Like, Mac, he is stoppable. You know, you can at least slow him down. You can limit the damage he does. And Dotson's the kind of guy that's good enough to do that.
Mac will slow down a little bit. I mean, it's been like a strip sack game. And so he has to slow down a little bit. That would be a great matchup to watch. So that's it. That's everything you guys need to watch this weekend. That's it. Week four we're heading into. My goodness.
Yes.
Week 4 of the NFL. Thanks to everybody for listening. Don't forget, the only way to maximize your NFL experience is with your PFF Elite Package. We'll have all of the games graded at some point on Monday. They get finalized. You get all of your grades, all a part of PFF Elite. And, of course, you get your green line picks as part of that package as well. Thanks to everybody for tuning in, and we'll be back Monday with our Week 4 review. Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in Week 1. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL.